Hello everyone and welcome to Superman Homepage Live, brought to you by supermanhomepage.com, the number one Superman fan site in the world. In this, our April 15th, 2024 show, we're going to be covering a range of topics, including the new Superman symbol revealed in full for the upcoming 2025 movie. We're going to be talking about David Korenswet's muscular physique revealed. We're going to be talking about Zack Snyder's brainwashed comments. And we're also going to do our regular segments. We're doing George Reeves costume analysis this week. We've got the fan favorite segment, This Week in History, and so much more to get through. And to join me tonight to discuss all these things is my good friend Mark Lacks. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Hey, Steve. Hey, how's it going?
Doing well, thank you very much. We got a full week of discussions to get through tonight, and fans are keen to get involved in tonight's show, and this is how they do that. If you do want to be part of tonight's show, well, we might have some time. We'll see how we go at the second half hour of the program. You can talk to us live. You just have to visit supermanhomepage.com/live and press the call now button, or you can scan the QR code on your screen right now, and you will be put into the green room where you'll be able to still watch and listen to the show, and we will bring you on if we have time in the second half hour of tonight's show. But we want to thank our sponsors and our patrons, Douglas Meacham, John Patrick Van Pelt, Tina Murray, and C. Ralph Adler. Thank you for your support. And if you'd like to join those fine folks and be a supporter of both the Superman Homepage and Superman Homepage Live, then you can simply click the join button below on YouTube. There are different levels of membership with different levels of perks. Or you can go to, patreon.com/supermanhomepage. We love our sponsors. We thank them for their support. And we really appreciate any support that you can give us here at the Superman Homepage. Now, if you're too shy to get on tonight's show, make sure you still participate in the comments, both on YouTube and on Facebook there. You can have a chat with fellow fans who are watching the show live. Mark and I will keep an eye on all the comments there, answer any questions you might have as we go along in this next hour, talking about all things Superman and what has happened this week in the world of the Man of Steel. Firstly, quick announcement, Michael Bailey will be back next week. He is settled back down, able to rejoin us as co-host from next week. Mark will still be around. He will still join me for the costume analysis segment that we've started, a new series that we're doing here, part two, as I said, on the show tonight. So Mark will be back next week. Looking forward to chatting with him and seeing what he's been up to these last couple of months. All right. Hopefully the sound is a little bit better tonight. I've had a few people mention that the sound quality wasn't that great. I figured out that my microphone was back to front, so hopefully it's sounding a little bit clearer. Let me know as we go along tonight. But Mark, what's your week been like? Pretty big news week in the world of Superman.
Yeah, big news week. My week itself has been pretty slow, but it's been a pretty active news week. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's get into tonight's topics. And as you can see behind me, is the symbol, full symbol revealed for the upcoming Superman movie. Here it is in all its glory. This was a photo taken of the screen that was shown during CinemaCon in Las Vegas this past week. Warner Brothers held a panel revealing the cast of the upcoming Superman movie. We'll be attending CinemaCon in 2025 to kick off the Summer of Superman, they called it. Appearing in a video message, David Korenswet, who plays obviously Superman Clark Kent, and co-star Rachel Brosnahan, who will be playing Lois Lane, jokingly passed on a spoiler, saying that if they could disclose anything, well, there's a man in a cape. Yes, at least one man in a cape. You heard it there first. So, but they did reveal this S symbol, red and gold version of the emblem, which is very reminiscent of the Kingdom Come symbol. We've known this, we've seen this symbol as part of what they've been showing us, some of the table read name cards. I've given my thoughts on it previously, but what do you think of the symbol, Mark?
I like it. I mean, it not my favorite, of course, but I like it. And of course, as we see it, it looks red and white. We know it's going to be the way I see it. but we know it's going to be yellow.
Yes. Yeah, that's just I guess the way the photo was taken. Definitely like a goldy yellow background right there. They've just kind of got like a highlight kind of shining through behind the diagonal bar of the S, I guess. Just that might have been just lighting that was part of the where it was taken. But I'm guessing we'll see a proper full version in high res at some point in time.
Yeah, it's, you know what, I like it. I like the, you know, Kingdom Come type of design, which it's, you know, similar to. It's also a little similar, I think, to My Adventures with Superman.
Maybe. Yeah, My Adventures with Superman still has the top and bottom parts of the S. They're still very straight. They're still very angular. That doesn't have any curves or dips. But, it's not quite there. I've heard a lot of people saying it doesn't look like an S. There's, you know, a lot of people are upset that there's no hook on the bottom. You know, serifs, if you're a typesetter like or graphic designer like I am, you know, the serifs at the end of the beginning of a letter. I've heard a lot of people say it would be nice if down the bottom there was just kind of filled in a bit down there to kind of give the indication at the bottom of an S. But the fact that it's rimmed in a yellow border sets off the S more. If it was just the red and no yellow border behind the red border, if you like, then it wouldn't stand out as much because, I mean, you take that top bar as the top of the S, you can take the bottom angle as the bottom of the S. It kind of works in that way. It's not my favorite. I'm more of a traditionalist. I like to see, you know, more of a traditional, you know, the trademarked S that we've seen in everything else that's pretty much all over the place everywhere you go. But to stand apart, the fact that this is the symbol for the new movie, I like it. And it won't be that, I mean, when you put her on a costume and you've got the blues and you've got the cape and you've got the flowing, you know, the red boots and you've got everything else, whatever they have, whether they have trunks or not, we still don't know. But you just put that as part of the costume and it still looks very much, it's that pentagonal, you know, diamond-shaped shield that we're all familiar with that stands and says Superman.
Yeah, it's still recognizable. I mean, I'd be very surprised if anyone, you know, looks at it and doesn't realize that's a Superman symbol. But no, it's I like it. Yeah, you know, I can have a little bit of the loop, you know, the serif or, you know, whatever you call it. But here's the thing. I mean, every filmmaker is going to have their own, you know, touch on how they want the S. Mm. You know, I mean, I think with Superman and Lois, I think we have pretty more traditional, traditional S that we like. I thought Henry Cavill, you know, I thought that it was different, but it was just close enough that you knew. So this is the same kind of thing. It's just their own look. And I mean, if everything's successful and all goes well, we're going to be seeing more of this Superman than in one movie. And that S will become, you know, very recognizable. Mm. You know, that version of the S will become very recognizable.
Justin Suarez in the comments says, the original S means hope in Kryptonian. What would this S mean? Well, the hope thing is really, it was brought about by Man of Steel more than anywhere else. You know, it's not an S on my world, it means hope. That was for Man of Steel. That was for Zack Snyder's take on the cinematic universe. You know, before that, the S was simply the House of L symbol. And you saw in the Christopher Reeve movies that every house had their own symbol. And in Man of Steel, same thing. You know, Zod had his own symbol and, you know, all the other Kryptonians had their own symbols. So, you know, on that version of the universe, that version of the story, the symbol meant hope. Can it still mean hope if that's what they want to go with? Mm-hmm. But it's not always been that. It's just been the crest of the House of L, which was his family crest. And then or it's been an S that was designed by Martha or Jonathan to go with the red and blue suit that they made for him. You know, and sometimes it's been a Kent family symbol that was like a snake type of thing that, you know, we've seen that in the Kents graphic novel or miniseries. So it has meant different things in different iterations. It hasn't always meant hope. And sometimes it's been from Krypton and sometimes it's been designed on Earth.
I think the way I see it, the way I look at it, I think it's probably going to be more of a L family crest, just by the way it's designed. And I could be wrong, because while some people are saying, well, it doesn't quite look like an S, you would think if Ma Kent was going to sew that, it would be a little more S. So they're probably going. I mean, I don't know. Who
No,
knows?
but you're right. I think you're right. I think you're on the right track. It seems to be more alien.
Right. If you look at it, it looks like more of a family crest, and that's probably what they're going with it. Now they could still say it's Hope, because I think the comics are even kind of
Yeah, leaning into that.
saying that as well. But yeah, no, I think it's probably going to be a family crest.
I agree. Butts and Enterprises in the comments says the Hope thing is thanks to Mark Waid. He thinks back to 2003. I think that would have been in the Birthright series. So yeah, it's not. It hasn't been around for the majority of Superman's 85-year history. It's only in the last 20 years or so that they've been using the S shield as a symbol of hope. But before that, it's been an S, or it's been the symbol of the house of El, as in Kal-El, Jor-El. So yep, both given our opinion on that. The other thing that was revealed this week, that we saw photos of David Corn's sweat for the last year or so, since however long we've known that he's been cast in the role for the upcoming Superman movie. He's been hiding behind other cast members in photos, or had a big hoodie sweater on. We couldn't really tell what his physique was like, how much he'd bulked up or what have you. And this past week, we saw photos emerge online of him in Mexico filming a TV commercial, so a different project that he's got going. And these photos have found their way online, and especially the one on the right, you can definitely see his shoulder muscles and his tricep muscles very much defined there. And I've seen a lot of snarky comments saying he's still not as big as Henry Cavill. He doesn't need to be. Superman hasn't always been portrayed as muscular as Henry Cavill's version. That's probably at the topmost muscular feature that we've ever seen. Christopher Reeve was very much not in that mold. George Reeves was never that muscular. And Superman doesn't have to be. Yes, the comic books make him appear that way because that is the ideal. That is what you can draw in a comic book. But I mean, Superman could be a skinny runt, because he doesn't get his powers from his muscles. He gets his powers from the yellow sun. It just looks more aesthetically pleasing if he is of a muscular physique.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. He doesn't. I mean, Superman does not have to be muscular at all, because like you said, he gets his powers from the sun. So why does he have to be, that muscular? I mean, it makes more sense to have him look more muscular. Christopher Reeve was more lean.
As was Brandon
You
Ralph.
certainly want, yeah. So exactly, and you certainly want some muscle there, but it doesn't have to be. He doesn't have to be this roided out
Yeah. Not that
Superman.
we're
But then
saying
again,
Henry Cavill was roided. We're not saying that at all.
no,
No,
no, no, no, no, no. Henry. I mean, no. Henry Cavill was muscular, and David Corn Sweat is muscular. And in the comics, depending on who the artist is, I mean, going back from the Golden Age, I mean, depending on who it is, some are broad shoulders, sometimes he's big here, sometimes he's,
Yeah, sometimes
so
he's barrel chested, sometimes, it's a different physique. But yeah,
a
people
different
talking about the
quality,
height.
one to the other.
Yeah, exactly. We shouldn't compare them because they are different. But people saying, oh, he looks like Henry Cavill, or people in Mexico mistakenly thought it was Henry Cavill. There's a reason. They all look like Superman. There's a particular type. It's Henry Cavill, Christopher Reeve, Brandon Routh look like Christopher Reeve. They all look like Superman. That's a point. It's a particular look. Exactly. So
Tyler Hoechlin.
they're supposed to look alike because they are supposed to look like Superman. So I just don't get those kind of comments. But people in the comments here are discussing about his height. He is taller than Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill was 6'1". David Corin Sweat is 6'4". I think Christopher Reeve was 6'3 or 6'4". So, and Superman traditionally has been 6'4 in height as far as the comic books are concerned. So, look, he's getting in shape. He is in shape. It's the right kind of shape as far as I'm concerned. Doesn't matter who you are as Superman. They've always, depending on the type of costume and material, they always use padding of some kind or another to bring out the definition, because the constriction of the material that they use, whether it be Lycra or something else, compresses the muscles that are there. So they use a bodysuit behind the costume to further enhance or to bring out the definition that exists of the person underneath. It's part of movie magic.
Exactly. I mean, you don't know, once he's got that suit on, what he's gonna look like. I don't think, I don't think he's gonna be really this big muscular, this muscular physique. But it's gonna, you want Superman to look strong enough, yeah. You want him to have some muscles,
of course,
but. Yeah, that doesn't bother me. It looks good. It looks like he's getting in shape, and that's what we want. So,
100%. All right, now here's a topic that really got a few people's noses out of joint, and Zack Snyder is back in the limelight, especially with superhero fans. He recently did an interview with Empire magazine, where he made a comment that he wasn't surprised that Superman or Batman fans were not impressed with his decision to have the superheroes kill, or whether it be villains or what have you. He said, "The only reason I'm not surprised is that some people got brainwashed by a bunch of material that's not consistent with true canon, and that's fine. They're on their own journey." Thoughts?
True canon. Who's true canon? He sounds like he's talking about his true canon. Okay, Superman, look, the whole Superman kills debate, it goes way back to the Golden Age. Superman is killed. Back in the Golden Age, he jumped off of a ship that was going to explode with a bunch of bad guys, and he just, swam away. And, on the show, he's left people to die on a mountaintop. I mean, it's all this craziness. Superman's killed throughout his career. The thing is, we'd rather have him not kill. And I think Superman would rather not kill if he, if that came to be. So the fact is, as fans, we all see Superman a little differently. Many of us see it, more traditionalist. We do not want him to kill, at all. Others say, look, and when the chips are down, whether you can mention Doomsday, that was a little different, but some people might say, when the chips are down, it's okay. I mean, there's so many people there now that want an injustice Superman, and I just don't understand that. I don't get that. That's not who Superman is, okay? That whole thing right there with General Zod, what bothered me the most, I think, I didn't want him to kill, but the fact that in the first movie they have him kill, set the whole tone of everything. Superman, you could look at a million examples, whether he did it inadvertently, whether he may have done it on purpose. The fact is, we would rather he doesn't kill. And just by saying what he did, that fans are brainwashed by certain material or whatever, that also offends his fans as well, because they're not quite in that mindset. Just because he killed Zod doesn't make them say, oh, well, Superman should always kill. He should always kill the villain. And a lot of his fans who really love those movies, they don't exactly agree with that. So just by saying that fans are brainwashed by certain material that's not true canon, I don't get it. But him saying not true canon, is he saying his work is true canon? No, it's not. It's not true canon at all. And to be perfectly honest, one more thing is to be perfectly honest. What is true canon? 100%. Things shift and change between comic books and movies. They shift and change all the time. And part of, you know, part of it too is what he did in his movies. You know, that was his canon. Okay. But it's not true canon. And to say that everyone, that fans are brainwashed is just, is very insulting.
I'm with you. I wrote about this in my recent Big Blue report, and I'm thinking of doing a video on it as well. Like you say, brainwashed, it's a bit elitist to say that fans who don't agree with you have been brainwashed. True canon, like you said, what is true canon? It's like saying, what is a true Superman fan? You don't have to be a fan of any particular, you know, you don't have to be a comic book reader to say that you're a true Superman fan. You don't have to like the Christopher Reeve movies or only like the Christopher Reeve movies to say you're a true Superman fan. So what is true canon? There is no such thing. It does not exist because, as you said, it shifts all the time. And over, you cannot point out one particular era of Superman history over that 85 plus year period and say that is true canon. There is no such thing. Everything is valid. Even, yes, Zack Snyder's version is valid. It's, that's a canon. It's like one particular era of or story version of the character. So to say that people have been brainwashed by a bunch of material that's not consistent with true canon is just elitist. It's as you said, insulting. And, you know, who is anybody, Zack Snyder or me or you, to tell anybody what is true canon and what they can and can't like or think of as Superman? Everyone's opinion is valid. So it's, yeah, I don't get him calling people brainwashed, but or trying to indicate what is or isn't true canon. I mean, I like Zack Snyder. I liked his movies. Yes, like you, I would have preferred that Superman didn't kill. And some people think that he needs to have killed once to be able to say, I'm never going to do that again.
And we didn't get that sense in the other movies.
No, because then in Batman v Superman, he appears to kill that terrorist or whatever he is that's got Lois, a gun to Lois's head. Right. And, you know, pretty much just takes him at super speed through a brick wall, and that would kill any human being. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've written about this at the in my Big Blue Report newsletter, which just went out yesterday, today. So you can read my thoughts on that, and I'm thinking of doing a video based on that information. So, but yeah, I, sorry, Zach, but you've lost me here.
I just wish he would be quiet. He did. Look, the Snyder Cut, the Snyder Cut, the Snyder Cut. Well, he got the Snyder Cut. He did the Snyder Cut. His version now of that world, you know, the movies is now over, essentially. Not to say I wouldn't welcome, you know, Gal Gadot or something, but I mean, that version is over. You're moving on. You're doing other projects. You're not doing Superman and Batman anymore. Move on. Be quiet. Why do you just have to keep going at it and just riling up fans like this?
Well, I guess to be fair, Empire's interviewer obviously asked him about it, and so he's going to answer. So, but yeah, I think we've pretty much given our opinion on it. Yeah. Moving on. In better news, Christopher Reeve's upcoming the documentary on the life and career of Superman actor Christopher Reeve, called Superman: The Christopher Reeve Story, will be released in theaters. It's going to get a theatrical release sometime in September of this year. No exact date has been specified, but Peter Safran, co-CEO of DC Studios, announced at CinemaCon, I think it was, that this documentary will be released in theaters in September, which is fantastic news.
Yes, I was hoping for that. It needs to be. You know, Christopher Reeve was, I mean, okay, we say was Superman for our generation, all that, but after everything he went through, you know, we watched him. And we don't even know behind, you know, how much pain and whatever it was he was in, the struggles he had to go through. Mm. You know, he was a Superman. And just telling his life story and in him playing Superman and everything he went through afterwards, I think that's just very important for people to see.
Agree 100%. Supposedly a trailer for the film was shown at CinemaCon and had people just teared up and just really impressed by it. So we're hoping that a trailer will see the light of day online soon and get everyone hyped for what is supposedly a very emotional and moving documentary about the life and career of Christopher Reeve. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, and hopefully it's a worldwide release theatrically that we get to see it. So it will be the first of the new DC Studios films to get released, because it is being released by Warner Brothers under that banner. So yeah, looking forward to it. We all thought it might be shown on CNN first, which is owned by Warner Brothers, and then eventually get onto Max, a streaming service, but to hear that it's going to have a theatrical release is awesome news, and I hope everyone gets out there and supports it by buying a ticket to go see it.
Yes, please.
All right, so we moved on to the TV side of the world of Superman. Superman and Lois will be on our screens probably around September, October this year for its fourth and final season. And Bitsy Tulloch, who plays Lois Lane, has been pretty active on social media. She posted a couple of photos of herself on the final day of, or the final days of filming for the finale. She posted these couple of photos, obviously in her dressing room after makeup and what have you, for the series finale, and also posted the cover of the script for the 10th and final episode of season 4, which will be the series finale. It is titled "It Went By So Fast," and isn't that true? It will be directed by Gregory Smith and is written by Brent Fletcher and Todd Helbing, series producers. So awesome news that, you know, it's happening. Obviously, we are sad that it's coming to an end, but yeah, some kind of bittersweet emotions about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the perfect title for the ending, and I'm sure they did that for a reason. Now, it's going to be a very emotional final season, even if there's, you know, some parts that are not as, you know, dark or whatever. It's just watching it for knowing we're watching it for the last time, it's going to be very emotional. I can just imagine what they're going through, on the set, being these characters for the last 4 or 5 years, more, because Tyler played it on Supergirl, and they introduced Lois on Supergirl, so they've been playing these characters for a while now.
Yeah,
and to just literally put an end to it, it's very emotional, and I'd love to see it go on another season, but it's not. This is going to be it, and hopefully, I know what we get is going to be great. So just look forward to that. Look forward to when it comes out in the fall and just, you know, go through there. But it's going to be an emotional season.
Yeah, she wrote, "Tried to take a normal first day of filming the Superman and Lois series finale selfie, but quickly ended up in tears. What a beautiful ride this has been. So grateful, especially to our crew. This final season has been tough physically and emotionally on everyone. And I see you and how hard you are working. And I'm so appreciative of you all." So a nice message there. And speaking of Superman and Lois, fans in the UK, we're talking about season 4, but fans in the UK haven't even seen season 3 yet, but they will finally be able to see it as of April 21st, Sunday, April 21st, BBC One, with a double bill at 3:15 p.m. For the first two episodes of season 3 will be on premiere on BBC One. So, fans in the UK, get excited. Season 3 is coming your way. But for fans in the US and elsewhere, Season 3 is coming to Blu-ray and DVD as well. So on June 11th, Blu-ray and DVD of Superman and Lois will be released. It is available now to order online. The Blu-ray is $29.98. The DVD collection is $24.98. If you do want to purchase it, please go through the Superman homepage website and click the Buy Now button that's there on our page, announcing the complete third season of Superman and Lois for home video. It's a great way to support the Superman homepage, because we get a percentage of the sale at no extra cost to you. So it's a great way to make sure you purchase the Superman and Lois Season 3 home video collection and support the website at the same time.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's going to be three discs with 9 hours and 15 minutes. Obviously, all 10. Was it 10 episodes for Season 3 or was it 12?
I think Season 3, I think it was more than 10. I don't know. It might have been... It may have been 12 because I think when they mentioned it's going to be a shorter season, the fourth season with 10 episodes, I think it was about 12 episodes. I could be wrong on that, but
yeah,
I'm looking at the back there.
I can't really say there, but I mean, I should look at my own episode guide on the website, but yeah. Nevertheless, it's the complete third season available on Blu-ray. So make sure you pick that up. So that is the Superman and Lois news for this week. Let's go to our break and then come back on the flip side to do our costume. Yeah, it was 13 episodes. Thank you, everyone, in the comments. Appreciate you filling us in. Yes, 13 episodes. So we're going to go to a break, come back on the flip side to do the costume analysis for George Reeves, The Adventures of Superman TV series. We'll be doing that. Then we're also going to be doing a fan favorite segment and hopefully This Week in History. So stick with us. We've got all that coming up right after these messages. Don't go anywhere.
We'll be back in a moment with the exciting climax of today's episode. So stand by.
If you're enjoying Superman Homepage Live, then please like and share this video with your family and friends. Also, if you'd like to subscribe to our YouTube channel, then you can click on the bell to receive notifications whenever we post a new video. You can also join our YouTube membership program, just click the join button below. Or you can become a patron and support our website by going to patreon.com/supermanhomepage.
Up in the sky.
It's a bird.
It's a plane. No, it's SupermanHomepage.com, the number one Superman fan site in the world. SupermanHomepage.com, covering the world of Superman from the 1930s to today. News, reviews, rumors, and reports. SupermanHomepage.com for all your Superman comics, TV shows, movies, cartoons, radio shows, and more. Everything you ever wanted to know about the Man of Steel and more. SupermanHomepage.com.
Thanks, Superman Homepage, for all the support over the years. I really appreciate it.
I'm Matt Ballmer. I'm the voice of Superman and Superman Unbound, and this is the Superman Homepage.
Right here on Superman Homepage.
Hi, Steven. This is Lois Lane from the Daily Planet.
Do you want to start a video podcast but don't know where to start? Or maybe you've been podcasting for a while but you're bored with the traditional audio-only format. Either way, I've got just the thing. Ecamm Live is the number one choice for busy podcasters who want to easily create professional-looking video podcasts. But why? They're more engaging for your audience, and video keeps their attention so they're more likely to stick around and become part of your community. Let me show you just how easy it is with Ecamm Live. You can drag and drop graphics right onto your show to make it more professional. If you have a co-host or guests, bringing them onto your show is a breeze. You can even tweak the look of your guest video no matter where they are. And you can set up your scenes in advance, so when your show starts, you can play your intro and easily switch between your scenes during the show. So it really simplifies your workflow and eliminates the need for a bunch of editing. Plus, your isolated audio tracks are saved right onto your computer along with your high-quality video files, so there's no more waiting for a link to download your files. They're right there. And once you're done, you can upload it to your syndication platform. It's time to give your audience what they really want. So if you're ready to become a visual authority and take your podcast to the next level with video, join the Ecamm fam. Thousands of podcasters have already made the switch. We're just waiting on you.
Go to supermanhomepage.com/Ecamm.
With the AT&T card, your people have the power to handle business better.
Taxi!
From anywhere to anywhere.
Come on, Clark.
It's okay, Lo. Everything's taken care of.
You always disappear in an emergency.
Order the AT&T card. It gives your people enormous abilities.
All right, we're back on Superman Homepage Live, where we're about to get into our costume analysis series. This is episode 2, part 2 of the costume analysis series that we've been starting. Tonight we're going to do the look at George Reeves' Superman costume for the Adventures of Superman television series, which aired from 1951 to 1957, a total of 104 episodes in that series. And we're going to check out, what was a pretty interesting costume. There is George Reeves in his full color glory. But it should be noted that obviously season one was filmed in black and white. Most people probably only ever saw the entire series in black and white because not many people had color television at the time. But seasons 2 to 6 were filmed in color and are now available to see in color, but most people only ever saw all 6 seasons in black and white back in the day before the home video release of the series. But there is a look at both of the costumes. So when they had the black and white episodes from season 1, it was more of a gray and muddy brown for the distinction that they needed for the clarification of the costume to be seen in black and white. They weren't worried about being true to color because of the fact that the costume would not be seen on screen in color. But then obviously when they did go to season 2 onwards, they needed to create a true color costume, which you can see on the left there. So Kenneth saying that seasons 3 to 6 were shot in color. I thought it was 2 onwards, but I could be wrong there. Maybe it was.
No, 2 was black and white.
Yes, my mistake. So it's 3 to 6 were shot in color. Seasons 1 and 2 were in black and white. So yeah, there you have it. But yeah, interesting that they had to create 2 different costumes. You know, obviously for the series. Obviously there were many different versions of the costume because George Reeves would famously destroy each costume by cutting out the S shield on the chest and burning the rest of the costume, what he called the monkey suit. Pretty much it stayed standard throughout, other than the variations in color.
Yeah, I mean, although we haven't gotten that close yet, but just the way that is, the S looks a little different. Just a little bit different with the color. I mean, well, maybe we can, now that we have that, now that we have this S, we can look at it.
Yep. Well, let's go through it bit by bit. Let's go through starting with the cape. And now we're just going to be looking at the color costume because that is obviously the truest version that we, you know, would be trying to compare with different things like color and what have you. Interesting with the cape, how it hung on the back of the, behind the neck, that it was a very big loop. You know, it didn't sit up there around the collar like most of the other costumes that we've seen. That was an interesting facet of the George Reeves costume.
I thought so too. Last year when we did Kirk Allen, I believe he had, you know, up to the neck. Mm-hmm. I always wondered this myself. Is it possible that it was just looser, more comfortable for him to do it like that? I mean, I just, you know, if not, it's an interesting choice that they did that, because I don't ever remember seeing any, well, I shouldn't say any, but I don't really remember seeing any Superman, especially in the comics, with a looped cape, you know.
Interesting choice. Now, yeah. It does have the S on the S shield on the, or the symbol on the cape, but in the traditional red and yellow version. The length of the cape here, I think it's a little bit longer than what it actually was in the TV series, or it appears longer. I think it sat, if we look at some further costume photos, it went down to just the top of the boots, which I think is the perfect length for a Superman shield. It doesn't need to touch the ground and doesn't need to be behind the kneecap. But if it's a little bit lower mid calf at the top of where the boots sit, I think that's a perfect length.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We've seen long capes. We've seen very short capes. This is probably a little too long, but you're right. Just about where the boots would begin. That's a pretty good length.
Now here we have the S shield, which, yes, it was an S in this symbol and everyone in this show, and everyone's having some fun jokes about it's not an S in the comments. A very angular S as far as the shape of the shield, but you know, it has the serifs, it has the traditional look of what we expect of the S shield. Interesting little diamond shape there in the top right hand corner. It's usually more of a triangle rather than a diamond in most cases, but very much the S shield that we've come to know and love, but not as polished as other versions.
No. Obviously, it's more defined than Kirk Allen's S. It's still pretty traditional. You're right. I do like the little diamond in the top there. But no, I mean, of course, as years go on, the design's going to change.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is still the most traditional S. I mean, even with Christopher Reeve and all that, yeah, sure, it's not exactly the same, but I mean, it's still just the, you know, most recognizable symbol. And I just think at the, you know, the point that kids were reading these in the comics, you know, it was just as faithful.
Yeah. Interesting that the cape, just going back to that quickly, does tuck into the collar there, where, as you, if you remember last week, we spoke about Kirk Allen's kind of attached onto the costume rather than looking like it tucked under the collar. So that was an interesting choice, and I much prefer that it tucks in under the collar than being attached to the top of the shoulders. So that's the interesting. It's very much of a woolen, as again, jersey type material. Obviously Lycra, and that was not invented back then. And I know that it would have been very hot, very warm to wear that, especially under the lights and filming and all the kind of activity that George would have had to have done. So, yeah, interesting material there. And there is the S shield up nice and close, as you can see the stitching and everything around that. And there we get to the trunks, much higher than the shorts that Kirk Allen had when it comes to around the hip area. Doesn't come as far down the thigh, but still very much a very good looking red trunk.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, yeah, the last three Kirk Allens, that was way too long. But no, I mean, this is getting back to the more traditional, what was in the comics, I think. Close enough anyway. Yeah, it's a good size, and the belt. We can talk about the belt. Yeah. You know, the yellow belt with the, I mean, it just looks really good. I mean, looking at it like this, you know, we could really look at it, study it. You know, watching it on the TV show, you know, it looks a little different. But no, I just really like the look of this costume, and this is probably the costume that every other costume was based on.
Very much,
you know,
so.
Because it's a live action one. So I just think, you know, from any kind of live action from here is just sort of based on this more traditional costume.
Yeah, it's got the red hoops, obviously, that the belt goes through, but the gold buckle is, yes, you know, not the yellow buckle that is not, you know, so it's a bit more interesting there. You'll notice that the cuffs on the sleeve, remember last week Kirk Allen had like a jersey type of like a pullover,
a sweater.
The cuffs here are a bit more streamlined and not as obvious. And then we go to the boots, and you can see here that they're a good height. Not as prominent a V shape at the front of the shin there that we've come to know of more, you know, recent versions of the costume, but still very much more of a boot here. I think Kirk Allen's seemed a bit more like dancing shoes, if you like a you know, they had that felt you know, kind of feel about them. This looks more like a boot and a little bit. And as you can see, the cape there just dipping below the height of the boot. So, yeah, I like the boots there.
Yeah, I like the boots too. Yeah, the ones last week, Kirk Allen, more like ballet boots.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
You know, these are more really, you know, a traditional boot.
And then that's George. He was the people's friend. He was very much a beloved personality. But looking at him as Superman, obviously Kirk Allen last week had a bit more of wavy hair. He had the kind of the lock at the front, that spit curl. George had very much the swept back hair, you know, with the Brill Cream combed back look. No waviness, no curl there at the front. And George definitely had that very strong jawline and that great smile that just made you trust him immediately.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think the curl would look good on him. I mean, I know we've seen this, you know, for years and years what he looks like, but I just don't think the curl would quite fit on his face. I think that's just the right look. Mm. Just, you know, the right look for him.
Yeah, and the fact that Clark Kent always wore a hat. You know, he didn't ever really saw Clark Kent's hair. He always had that fedora on, that reporter's hat. So the hair was not an issue between, you know, now everyone says, oh, he's Clark Kent parts it on one side and Superman parts it on the other to differentiate, you know, kind of thing. It's not that important when Clark is always wearing a hat, as was the trend, the style back in that day.
Mm-hmm.
So overall rating for the costume from your point of view?
Oh, from what we're doing, from 1 to 5,
say, what would you, you know, I thought last week Kirk Allen's was probably about a 3.
Yeah, well, this is definitely, I'm going to say a 4.5.
Okay, very cool. I would agree, about a 4 for me. So there you have it. That is our analysis of the George Reeves costume. Join us next week when we're going to look at Bob Holliday. Yes, we're going to be looking at the man who portrayed Superman on Broadway for It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. We'll return next week for that segment. All right, let's move on to the fan favorite segment of our show. All right, Mark, what was our fan favorite question from last week?
What is your favorite Brainiac comic book cover? And Rommel Kadunkin, I'm sorry if I said that wrong, wrote Action Comic. Say that again.
Kadunkin?
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
We apologize, Rommel. Action Comics 861 by Gary Frank. This is more Brainiac's Planet Kaloo, but it's cool.
Yeah. Very much a cool Brainiac cover. You can only see Brainiac himself, I think, at the front there, if that's, or could just be another one of the versions behind, but a very interesting cover, Action Comics 861. Thank you, Rommel. All right, next up we had J.P. Rocha, who wrote in saying, my favorite Brainiac cover is from the most recent run of Justice League, issue number 18. The Legion of Doom cover is drawn by Francis Manapul and also features Lex Luthor, Sinestro, Cheetah, and Gorilla Grodd with a de-aged turtle. Manapul's Brainiac is so cool. One of my favorite artists. I love his Rebirth Trinity book. Thank you. Yeah, that's very cool. The Legion of Doom there on the Justice League 18 cover. Thank you, JP.
And then Kirby Lindell wrote, these are my two favorite Brainiac covers. Superman 167 is blown up and in a frame in my basement. I absolutely adore this cover. Kurt Swan is my all-time favorite Superman artist. Superman in the Birdcage with Brainiac and Lex Luthor menacing the shrunken Superman is magnificent. But the Action Comic below, it is equally good. Swan really captured very evil, scary Brainiac. This is the Brainiac I grew up with and the one that I love.
Yeah, I
agree with that.
Two very iconic covers. So thank you, Kirby, for bringing those to our attention. Very cool. Next up, we have Lorenzo Valdez, who said, my favorite Brainiac cover is from Smallville Continuity number 1. This Brainiac cover stands apart from most Brainiac covers in that this cover features heroic Brainiac 5, given that Smallville's version of Brainiac had evolved into Brainiac 5. I love James Marsters' take on both villainous Brainiac and then also Brainiac 5, and the way that arc continued into the season 11 comic books, with more of Brainiac 5 with the Legion of Superheroes, as well as was epic. Brainiac 5 looks so cool on this cover, drawn in Master's likeness, right alongside Superman, drawn in Tom Welling's likeness. Very interesting choice. Thank you for that, Lorenzo. Not one of the ones I would have thought to have received, but very cool.
No, that is very interesting. That wasn't even, to be honest, it wasn't even on my radar.
No.
And then, let's see. Next we have Elliot Quadrado, who wrote my favorite Brainiac comic book cover. Would have to go to Action Comics 868 from 2008. I missed out on that story when it came out, but what always struck out to me about the cover was its ominous tone, with Clark almost reaching out to Brainiac's updated form, seeming both curious and cautious as he hovers above him, before him.
Yeah, that's a really cool cover. Definitely Superman not sure what to make of this Brainiac on that cover. So thank you, Elliot. Next up, we had Mike Ordo, who said, my favorite Brainiac cover is the New 52 Superman 23.2. Also, I attended Cleveland Fan Expo this past weekend, I attended Cleveland Fan Expo this past weekend. Every year they have a panel for the Siegel and Schuster Society, which commentates and celebrates Superman's creation in the city of Cleveland. After a couple of decades of trying to get a Superman statue built in the city, it is finally happening. It was announced during the panel by Jerry's nephew and Joe's niece. I had the chance to speak with both of them and got a little bit more info. The statue will be built on the Cleveland Convention Center property and will feature Superman taking flight while Joe and Jerry look on pointing at him. They hope to have it completed by Cleveland Comic Con next year in March. On my way out of town, I even stopped by Jerry's old house. I included a picture from the panel and of Jerry's house. So thank you, Mike, for both giving us your Brainiac cover and talking to us about that Siegel and Schuster Society panel. We do plan to have a full report on that tomorrow. I believe our Patrick, who attended that, will be writing up a report talking about that Superman statue that will be erected in Cleveland. So very appreciative of Mike giving us an update on that as well. So thank you to everyone for your fan favorite entries. We appreciate everyone who posted sent those in. What is our new fan favorite question for this week, Mark?
Our new fan favorite question is, what is your favorite Bizarro comic book cover?
Yeah, we're moving on to Bizarro. We just did Brainiac. What is your favorite Bizarro comic book cover? The email address to send your entries into is info@supermanhomepage.com. That's info@supermanhomepage.com. And we will read out the entries that we receive for the favorite Bizarro comic book cover when we return to this segment next week. So get involved in the fan favorite segment of our show. All right, let's move on to This Week in History.
Come with me now, my son, as we break through the bars of your earthly confinement, traveling through time and space.
All right, so here is This Week in History. I'm going to bring up all the graphics right now and take you through what happened decade by decade over the last 85 years this week. We start way back in, we got all the way back to 1944, where this week, April 19th, saw the release of Action Comics number 73. In this particular issue, we had the Hobby Robbers, was a Superman story, but there was also backup stories for Vigilante Super Sleuth McFooey, Congo Bill, Mr. America, and Zatara, but Superman was on the cover of Action Comics number 73 right there, with a couple of pranks kind of things, the cuckoo clock and just wacky stuff happening.
Yeah, with a cuckoo clock, yeah. A clever weapon, cuckoo clock.
Then we have nothing in 1954 and nothing in 1964. So we jump all the way up to 1974, where on April 16th, we saw the release of World's Finest Comics number 224, Super Sons story, The Shocking Switch of the Super Sons was the main story. There was also another Superman Batman story called Superman's Secret Master and another Superman Batman story called Fort Crime. And in between those, there was a Johnny Quick story and a Metamorpho story and a great Nick Cardy cover right there.
Yes, definitely.
So that was
the Super Sun. Those are fun stories.
Yeah, they are. So that's 1974. Then we jump to 1984, where April 19th saw the release of Supergirl number 21, written by Paul Kupperberg, and this was a very interesting. That Supergirl with the headband look that Michael Bailey loves so much.
This, I believe this was a crossover. I believe part one was in either Action or Superman, and this was, I believe, the second part. I love that headband Supergirl. When I started reading, that was pretty much, you know, what she was wearing. So I have a fondness for that.
Yeah, that was the Curse of the Kryptonite Man story. Then in 1994, we jump right up to 1994, where this very famous cover for Superman number 90, Battleground Metropolis, the Battle for Metropolis story, by Dan Jurgens, inked by Joseph Rubinstein, and with Dan Jurgens also doing the writing on this issue, but the interiors were penciled by Brent Anderson.
Yeah, that's a nice cover.
Nice Jurgens cover there. Then we jump to 2004, where we saw Action Comics 814, another day at the office. This one written by Chuck Austin, with pencils by Ivan Rice, and the cover there by Arthur Adams.
Yes, and that, it's that, I think, Calib. It looks like Calib.
Yeah, it is. Coming through from the back. Also, 2004 saw the release, April 14th, of It's a Bird, It's a Plane, or it was just called It's a Bird, a hardcover collection written by Stephen T. Siegel. I remember this well because the artwork was kind of weird and wacky, but an interesting story nevertheless.
I did not read this story.
Okay. Well, there you have it, something to look for.
I remember it, but yeah. I didn't read it. Hopefully at some point I might get the chance.
Also that same week saw the release of JLA number 96, The Heart of the Matter. Superman there standing over what looks like Wonder Woman with a sword, her own sword, stabbing her there. So a very interesting and dynamic cover there. 2014 saw the release this week of Justice League number 29, Forever Heroes. And also that same week we saw the release of Smallville Lantern number 1, where Clark became a Green Lantern for a bit in that series. And then also that same week saw Supergirl number 30 released, Red Remembrance, and that was a period where Supergirl also became a lantern, but this one a red lantern because she was always very angry. So that was the comic book side of things. In the real world, this week saw the celebration of the birthday of John Shea, who played Lex Luthor in Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. He was born April 14th, 1949. Also on April 14th, Mark Pillow, who played Nuclear Man in Superman 4, was born in Leeds, West Yorkshire in England in 1959, 10 years later. Joan Alexander, who was the voice best known for the voice of Lois Lane in the 1940 Superman radio series, she was born in St. Paul, Minneapolis on April 16th, 1915. The late, great Joan Alexander. And this week, April 18th, marks the anniversary of the release of Action Comics number 1, Superman's debut comic book. A copy of this recently sold for $6 million, if you recall. It was released April 18th, 1938. So a big anniversary coming up for that comic book. And that was This Week in History. There you have it.
Very good.
All right, well, that pretty much brings us to the end of tonight's episode. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Superman Homepage Live. Thanks to my co-host, Mark Lax. Thank you, Mark. And thanks for covering over these last couple of months for Michael Bailey, who has been away. But I'm looking forward to having you back next week when we do our Superman costume analysis. But thanks very much again for tonight.
Well, thank you. We're blacked out for some reason.
Sorry, I haven't taken my graphic screen off. There we go.
Okay, there we go. All right, thank you for the opportunity. It's been a lot of fun, and I'll be continuing on for a little bit, so I appreciate that. So,
yep.
Steve, thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you, Mark. And thank you to our sponsors and our patrons, Douglas Meacham, John Patrick Van Pelt, Tina Murray, and C. Ralph Adler. We appreciate your support. Thank you to everyone who watched the show with us this past hour. We appreciate your company. Thank you so much. But I'll be back with Michael Bailey next week, and Mark will join us as well on Monday, April 22nd at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time for another edition of Superman Homepage Live. We hope you'll join us then. Until then, be sure to check out supermanhomepage.com for all your daily news updates on everything surrounding the Man of Steel. I'm Steve Eunice. On behalf of myself and Mark Lax, thanks for watching Superman Homepage Live, brought to you by supermanhomepage.com. Good night. We'll be right back.